So the version of the band with Butch, Steve, Jack, and Jerry on drums, how long does that version last?
Well, probably till 63 when I went on with Mike Wagner and they took on
Tommy Dorholt at that point.
Tommy Dorholt for bass.
So I'd like to hear some of the song titles you guys covered. The song title and the artists. Can you remember some?
Oh, naturally, Johnny B. Good.
Chuck Berry. CC Rider, Elvis.
Yeah.
A lot of Jerry Lee Lewis because I got on the piano for a while. And
oh, you did keyboards too?
A little bit. If it was in a key of C, I was fine.
Yeah, all the popular songs at that time, than any instrumental song that came out, he could pick it up right away and we'd do it. But all the main popular singers at that time, male singers, we didn't do much of the girl singers.
Were you listening to KDWB or WDGY?
Both.
Both.
Yeah. Bill Deal?
No. Both.
WDGY, I think, was Bill Deal. Wasn't it?
Yes, that's correct. So when you guys played at, say, Bill's Roller Rink, how many kids would fit in that place?
Oh, jeez. A couple hundred, probably.
Yeah.
200, 300, maybe.
One night I asked Bill, and it was packed. I said, well, you're pretty happy about tonight? Well, I think I had more here last night. And they were just elbow to elbow. He was never quite satisfied.
If the fire marshal would have showed up, he would have shut us down.
He never made much money roller skating. And when he started having live music on Friday and Saturday night, the kids started making money. That's when he bought his lake place, too.
What would a typical payment be for the trespassers to play one night?
My first time there was $40.
Is that what it was?
Yep, $40.
Well, we thought it was big.
Yeah. Later, it went up to 100.
Yeah, probably did.
We started getting kind of a percentage of the gate, and it kind of got up closer to 100.
Well, it's good money. Gas was 19 cents a gallon.
That's right.
Did you ever get approached by a booking agent to book the band professionally or not?
Not really. We had another kid we went to school with, Ron Erickson. He was going to go out and get us bookings and stuff, and Steve and I did a better job than what he did. And he always wanted to get a cut out of it, and he didn't last very long. So we did everything ourselves.
So, Butch, you exit the band in 1963, and who takes over on bass guitar?
Tom Dorholt, who was a classmate of ours, too. He was attending all of our dances, I think. And I approached him and said, offered him the job, and he didn't have a bass guitar yet. So it took me about 2 weeks to train him in and to walk that bass like Butch can do. And he turned out to be very real well.
So you recruited him.
Recruited him.
And taught him how to play bass guitar.
Right. Sitting in our bedroom, and away we went.
So this version in 63 would be Tom Dorholt on bass guitar, Steve, lead guitar, lead vocals, Jack on lead and rhythm guitar, and Jerry Paulson on drums.
That's correct, yep.
Okay. Have the Beatles made the scene yet at this time? Or not? Is this pre-Beatles?
No. Pre-Beatles.
Yep.
Okay.
They were 1964, I think.
They
finally came around.
Did you guys wear anything special on stage as far as stage outfits?
Always.
What'd you wear?
Our main clothes was black slacks, white shirts, short sleeve, and this little tie, kind of like an ascot tie. It looked like a cummerbund, but they made a tie of it. Then we had black vests. We wore with that sometimes. And then we had suit jackets, like we played at the prom. We had all matching black jackets. We went down to Kiefer's and bought some shirts and stuff.
Sweaters, yeah.
We had those purple ones.
That's right.
I still got it one. It shrunk. It don't fit anymore.
We did have one metallic shirt. It was a pullover shirt that my uncle brought back from Hawaii. He had been playing in a rock and roll band while he was in the service there. And somebody would be appointed leader that night and would wear that shirt. It's kind of fun because we traded off and on. And
whoever got the gig got to wear the shirt.
You didn't want to wear it in the wintertime. The thing was just freezing.
Was the music scene changing around 1963?
I think it was, yes.
What were some of the changes you saw?
I saw more folk music coming out. There was a lot more bands emerging. The Del Counts, of course, the Trashmen, and some of the others were just suddenly, they were exploding everywhere. Mm-hmm. So,
did you see the Accents?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did see the Accents.
Tom. Mm-hmm.
Tom Nystrom. And Danny's Reasons were around.
Gregory D. and the Ivanis, did you
Gregory
see
D.
Yeah, we followed them around, too.
Another guy named Donnie Dax and the Diablos. Donnie was a good guy. Mm-hmm. He could really play the blues.
Did you guys play at Danceland in Excelsior?
I don't think we did we? But we were out there plenty of times.
Yeah, I did with Mike.
Yeah. I went out to see Conway Twitty and a few of the other big groups.
Yeah.
Everly Brothers.
Did you cover any of the Everly Brothers songs?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Butch and I would do, I thought, a good Dream. Job on Dream. And
did three or four of them.
Yeah. Remember, we had to have a couple slow songs in there finally, you know. We couldn't just play fast ones all night.
So how did the Trespassers sound different than other local bands at the time? What was your sort of feature, Jack?
I think we've always heard from most everyone that we had, I guess, as Travis Tritt would put it, drive in your country. We had a hard driving beat, and that's something that everyone would tell us, that we were an easy band to listen to and to dance to.
Mm-hmm. And that kept the club owners happy, correct, when the kids would dance?
And we had a lot of fun.
A number of people told us that they had a lot of fun just watching us. All we were doing was having fun playing. We enjoyed what we were doing so much. If we felt like bouncing around doing something crazy, we did, or standing up in the back of our amplifiers like we at Woodley's Country Dam. We played over there, too. That was a real hot teen place. And to get invited to play there, we thought we were on the top of the world. Man, that one song, Ray Charles, What Did I Say? I think we played it for a half hour, and we were standing on our amplifiers most of the time. That's when we had bigger amps then, too.
What kind of amps were you using, by the way?
Fenders. Yeah, mostly Fenders at that time.
Did you guys switch guitars yet at this point, or are you still on the original equipment?
No, we were progressing. Jack and I each bought Fender. I had a Fender Telecaster, and Jack, you had a
Jaguar.
Fender Jaguar
first,
and the knife.
First year they came out. I still have the guitar.
What year was that?
63.
And I came down with a Gretsch, Chet Atkins, big orange guitar. I had a sore shoulder for the first 2 weeks I had it. It was so heavy.
And Butch, did you upgrade your bass guitar at some point?
I went to Gibson. Mm-hmm. Went to Gibson bass. I've always had Gibsons and Epiphone for some reason.
Okay, so the Trespassers version with Tom Dorholt in on bass guitar, how long does that last?
Till 64, mm-hmm. 65.
What happens next in the history?
I get transferred out of town. I was working with Musicland Stars all that whole time, and after high school, and I get transferred to St. Cloud. So, but we had been playing, I should back up here, we had been playing St. Cloud quite a bit because I was going to college up there, and these boys were kind enough to come up, and we played quite a few places up there before I was transferred up there permanently. So.
And at some point you turn into a three-piece?
Yeah, so when we start that, Butch, 19...
Well, this one with Dorholt.
Oh, with Tommy? Oh, yeah, we ended up as a three-piece band.
And who were the three guys?
Tommy Dorholt, myself, and Jerry Paulson.
Okay.
And we were playing up in Nisswa a lot. at the Blue Blazer, it was called. It's now the Legion up there, I think it is, but we were having a good time up there, too. You had a different crowd every night because there was so many campers, and a lot of the kids worked up there at those resorts.
So that's in 65.
Yep.
And how long does the three-piece version of the band last?
Well, for about a year. Then I got transferred permanently to St. Cloud mm-hmm. with Musicland.
Did the band do any recordings at all?
Steve and I both worked at Musicland for a while, and his boss asked one time for a tape because he knew somebody that knew somebody. So we recorded some of the stuff that we had, and poor recording at the time. I don't even know whatever happened to the tape.
A live recording?
Yeah. Yeah.
Never went in the studio?
Never went to the studio.
You never had the desire to press up a 45?
I guess not. Nobody approached us, and
it's kind of an awkward time at this period. Some of us had other careers going and getting married, or we had soon gotten married. And so there was a struggle to find time to do all the things we wanted to do and needed to do. Mm-hmm. So there was a strain at times in getting together to practice and to play.
Mm-hmm. We really weren't that serious at the time. We were just out having fun. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just trying to get some extra money and meet girls primarily.
And we got married, so we met them.
And then we married them.
So after the band officially breaks up in 65, do you guys stay in music? Do you go to other bands, or are you out of the music business?
I went to other bands. When I moved to St. Cloud, I had joined a band, young guys, called the Velvet Hammers. We played a lot of local places in St. Cloud, the Domino's, Brickies, the Office, the Press Bar. And the only bad thing was that his mom and dad were along on every gig, so you had to really behave yourself.
Who was this?
I can't think of his name, no, Dan Laramie. Dan Laramie and his brother Jim Laramie. One played bass, and the other one played drums. So I was with them for about a year, mm-hmm. and then I joined another band about 6 months later called Billy Bean. I don't know if you've heard of Billy Bean, but he was a young guy. He was only about 17, but he could really sing country. So all of a sudden, I'm in the country music. Probably should have kept the Corral's name, but and then we played the. Lead on for a lot of the country shows that would come through at the Armory, and Stonewall Jackson, Connie Smith, some of those.
And Jack, what do you do after the Trespassers come to an end?
Got married in 1966 and stayed busy being a husband. And then I started a law enforcement career in 1968. During that period of time, we would still get together periodically as a backyard jam sessions or wherever we could muster up a little time and have some fun doing that. And it was pretty amazing that sometimes would be a long period of time we'd get together that it wouldn't take but a couple of songs and we were right at the tight again. So we did that, but I remained in a law enforcement career for 30 years, but still later on in the 80s, we still got together and as an organized band. I played a little less than these guys, but the band continued then.
All right. Butch, what did you do after the Trespassers?
I went on with Mike Wedding and the Boss for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, we played an awful lot. I remember one time we played 8 times in 1 week. Friday we played at the state basketball tournament at the Leamington Hotel in the afternoon. We packed up from there and headed for Frederick, Wisconsin. That was the 8th time we played that week. Mike said, if there's money to be made, he says, I'm going to be there. He had a book that thick of every dance hall in the area, who owned it, how many miles away it was, what it cost to go there, what he paid, if we had to bring our own bouncers or not, you name it. He was offered $10,000 for that book at one time. Are you kidding me? Yeah, it was a good experience. And after I broke up with Mike, and there was a couple other local bands that I've known the kids for quite a while, and I go and play private gigs and stuff with them. Mm-hmm. But never got into too much till he came back from California.
Okay, and how does this 1983 reunion come about?
Oh,
I moved back from Southern California from Musicland. I was the assistant to the West Coast regional manager or something. I had some title. I had about 80 stores I took care of out there. And when I finally came back, we got together at a party, didn't we, guys? It's a private party. And then somebody there said, hired us to play. We hadn't done it for so long, we didn't even know what to charge, I remember. Yeah. But all of a sudden, you're right back into it. And
we were going to come back as a country band, but every time I talked to anybody, they said, we want rock and roll. We don't want no country. They remembered our reputation before. So every place we went from there on out, it was rock and roll again.
Did you have Jerry back on the drums?
Yep.
Yeah.
Keith Johnson from the Ivymen was our rhythm guitar player, lead guitar player, rhythm guitar player, and singer. And number one, goof off. He entertained the audience. Just, they come, I think, mainly just to watch and see what he was going to do next. Yeah, terrific character.
And how long do you keep the 83 version going?
Well, that 83 reunion started at the Holiday Inn. Johnson's band at that time.
Stagebrush.
Yeah. They played at Holiday for a week. They hated playing Monday nights because it was so dead. And they asked us if we'd sit in on Monday nights. We said, yeah, that'd be a good time. Here's four Monday nights for a month. And we'll do it. So we got the brainy idea, well, the Trespassers are just getting started again. There are a few people that know we're doing this. Well, let's put the word out. So I made up flyers, put an announcement in the paper, and just blabbed it all over, called people, went to word of mouth. When we were setting up, I told the girl there, I says, we're going to have a big night here. So I suggest you keep another bartender on. No, Mondays are very dead. About an hour after we started playing, there was over 300 people in this room that shouldn't have had 250. It was packed from one end to the other. She come back, she is so mad at me, and I tried to tell you. They had to call other people to come back for another bartender and another waitress. It was just crazy.
Yeah, the only complaint was they couldn't get a drink that night, most of the people.
So when you guys look back at the Trespassers in the early days, 1959 to 1965, any particular memories stick out that you're fond of?
Woodley's Country Dam.
Woodley's Country Dam, that was a hot one.
Lake City was good, too. I guess just any place that we could play and get together and have people there that appreciated what we were doing and still make a little money doing it. We're just having too much fun and getting paid for it.
We were playing Mr. Lucky's down on Lake and Nicollet.
Yeah, every couple months we played there.
And we would get done there at 12 or 12:30, and then we'd run across the street and watch Mojo Buford because he was playing the blues across the street with his band.
Was that at Maddie's Barbecue?
Yep. Yep. Maddie's. That's right. I forgot the name of that place.
I saw B.B. King there one night.
Yeah.
Jack, any special memories for you from the early days?
No, I guess I reflected my thoughts. I was always impressed with Mr. Lucky's. Sharing the same stage as Jerry Lee Lewis was on. And we had a large crowd. It was always busy there. We played a five-night stand there. It was a good time with I think it was one time was I kind of felt like we made that transition from kind of a small town garage band to the somebody worth listening to.
That was a big deal to play it.
Yeah,
Mr. Lucky's.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And
that prom.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, three of us would go down on Sundays. We were still in high school. It wasn't called Mr. Lucky's. It was called the Loon.
Magoo's.
What was it?
Magoo's.
Was it Magoo's then? Anyways, we go down there on Sundays because they didn't serve liquor. But you could see Jerry Lee Lewis, Buddy Knox, Bo Diddley, all these bands would come in there. And they would play on Sundays. So we kind of got to know the place. And then when we felt kind of special when they asked us to come down there.
So any plans for the trespassers at this time?
Well, before the arthritis sets in and takes over so we can't do anything, we'd kind of like to get together and make a CD for our kids, our grandkids. Some of them don't even know we've ever played. But Jack's kids found out here a while back that what a good guitar player he is. Just something we like to do, pick out about six, eight songs, perfect them, and put them on a CD so they got something to listen to someday.
That sounds nice. Steve, Jack, you guys on board for that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's something we have talked about for quite some time. So it's something that needs to happen fairly soon.
Well, Butch, Jack, Steve, thank you for taking the time to share with us the story of the trespassers.
Thank you for showing interest.
Thank you for having us. Thanks.
The preceding interview was recorded on August 21st, 2012 at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota, and was produced by Danny Johnson and Tom Campbell. The copyright owner of this interview is MinniePaulMusic.com. Come on, ooh, now she's gone.